You're sitting at the kitchen table with your tablet, planning a cross country. You've got your route roughed in, fuel stops picked, weather looks reasonable, and then you zoom in on the sectional and you start noticing things. There's a hatched area outlined in blue with the letters R and a number a little further north. A big swatch of magenta with MOA written across it. Over near the coast, some shaded region with a W, you know you should care about these. But do you actually know what each one means? And more importantly, do you know which ones you can fly through? Which ones require permission? And which ones will get you a phone call from the FAA if you bust through without thinking? I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, here on Radio Hangar, and today we're doing a real walkthrough of special use airspace. Not the paragraph in the handbook, the kind of walkthrough that actually sticks. Before we dig in, a quick shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the pilot journey. First solo, private certificate, instrument rating, commercial. There is a coin for every milestone. If you want a real way to mark the moments that matter in this training journey, check them out at AviationSoul.com. Alright, the Federal Aviation Administration divides special use airspace into two broad categories, regulatory and non-regulatory. That sounds dry, but it matters enormously in practice. Regulatory special use airspace means the rules are codified in the Federal Aviation Regulations. Bust into regulatory special use airspace when you're not supposed to be there and you have broken federal law. Non-regulatory airspace is more of an advisory. It says something unusual is happening here. Pay attention. Let's walk through each type, starting with the hardest rules, prohibited areas. These are exactly what they sound like. You are prohibited from flying there. No exceptions for VFR traffic. No checking if the activity is cold. No creative routing through the edges. You do not fly in a prohibited area. On your sectional, prohibited areas show up with a solid blue outline and the letter P followed by a number. The most well-known ones are around Washington, D.C., P-40 and P-56 surround the Capitol. P-49 covers Camp David. These exist for national security reasons, and the consequences of busting one are not something you want to learn firsthand. We are talking intercept aircraft, potential certificate action, and depending on where you wander, a visit from federal agents. When you're planning a flight near these areas, give them a clear, wide berth. Not a close call, not eyeballing the edge of the line, stay clear. Restricted areas. These are different from prohibited areas in one critical way. You may be able to fly through them under certain conditions, but that word may carry a lot of weight. Restricted areas exist because hazardous activities take place within them. Artillery fire, missile testing, military gunnery operations, the kind of activity that creates a genuinely dangerous environment for civil aircraft. On the chart, restricted areas have a blue hatched border and an R followed by a number. You will find them prominently around military installations like Fort Liberty in North Carolina, Eglin Air Force Base in Florida, White Sands in New Mexico. Here is how they work. Restricted areas are either active or inactive. When active, you must have permission from the controlling agency to enter. The controlling agency is listed in the chart supplement, which is what the FAA now calls the old airport facility directory. It is usually a military controlling agency, and their frequency may also be printed on the sectional. When the restricted area is inactive, meaning the hazardous activity is not happening, you can fly through it without special permission. But here is the question every student pilot asks immediately: how do I know if it is active? You have a few options. Call flight service before your flight and ask about the status of that specific restricted area by name and number. Or contact the controlling agency directly on their assigned frequency. Or if you're flying VFR on flight following, ask ATC. The thing I want you to lock in is this. Do not assume a restricted area is inactive because you can't see anything happening below you. A missile range can look completely empty from 10,000 feet and still be actively firing. Check before you go, not as you approach. Here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training. Many military ranges operate on weekday schedules and may be completely inactive on weekends. Flight service can often give you a schedule. Knowing that before you depart can save you a significant route deviation military operations areas, or MOAs. This is where the rules change significantly, and it is the area where I see the most confusion in student pilots. MOAs are designated blocks of airspace where the military conducts high-speed maneuvering, air combat training, formation flight, and other dynamic operations. The critical difference between a MOA and a restricted area is this. A MOA is non-regulatory airspace for VFR pilots. You can fly through it. You do not need permission. However, let's think about what is actually happening in an active MOA. You have fighters maneuvering at high angles of attack, changing formation at speed, possibly in a nose-low dive toward the surface. These aircraft are traveling at speeds where, by the time they see you, there is essentially no reaction time. The fact that you are legally allowed to be there does not mean it is smart to be there. On the sectional, MOAs show up as magenta-hatched areas with names printed inside them. The Dare MOA along the eastern coast, the Jedi MOA out in California, the Tombstone MOA in Arizona. The chart lists the altitude block they cover and the hours of operation. Before flying through a MOA, call flight service and ask if it is active. If it is, you have options. Route around it. Contact the controlling agency on their listed frequency and get traffic advisories. Talk to Center if you're on flight following. ATC can often tell you in real time whether the MOA is hot. If the MOA is cold, fly through it without a second thought. If it is hot, route around it when you can. If you genuinely need to fly through it, make a radio call first and get eyes on the situation. The Airman Certification Standards expect you to know how to interpret special use airspace on a chart and understand what entry requirements apply. On a practical test, an examiner will put a restricted area or MOA in your cross-country path and watch what you do with it. Knowing the difference between them is not optional. Warning areas. Warning areas are similar to restricted areas in terms of the activities taking place inside them, but they exist primarily over international waters off the coast of the United States because the FAA does not have sovereignty over international airspace the way it does over U.S. territory. These areas cannot technically be restricted. Instead, they are designated to warn pilots that hazardous military activity may be happening there on the chart. Warning areas use a hatched pattern similar to restricted areas but carry a W prefix. You will see them off the coast of Florida, along the East Coast, and out in the Pacific. For most VFR pilots, the practical guidance mirrors MOAs. Check the status before you go, seek advisories if available, and route around active warning areas when you can. Alert areas. Alert areas are designated to let pilots know that a high volume of pilot training or an unusual type of aerial activity is concentrated in that space. The key word is advise. Alert areas are entirely non-regulatory. VFR pilots can fly through them freely. There are no entry requirements. What alert areas are communicating is, be extra vigilant here. There may be student pilots in pattern work, parachute operations, formation practice, or any number of activities that increase traffic density significantly. In an alert area, see and avoid is your primary defensive tool. On the sectional, alert areas show up with a magenta outline and the letter A followed by a number. Near large flight training centers, you will often find alert areas specifically designated because student traffic volume is high. The area around Vance Air Force Base in Oklahoma is a good example. A high number of military student pilots training in that airspace at any given time creates a real see and avoid environment controlled firing areas. This one surprises a lot of student pilots because it does not appear on the sectional at all. Controlled firing areas exist where certain weapons and explosives are used, but unlike restricted areas, the firing activity is stopped anytime an aircraft approaches. The people operating the range are responsible for spotting aircraft and ceasing operations when necessary. Because the hazard stops for you, there is no need to restrict pilots or depict it on a chart. You will almost never consciously notice that you have passed through one. Then, there are national security areas. These are designated where the FAA has determined that extra vigilance is needed near sensitive infrastructure. Nuclear facilities, major dams, critical utility infrastructure. On the chart, they show up with a magenta-dashed border. The FAA requests that pilots avoid flying through them. That word requests tells you they are not regulatory, but you should treat a request from the FAA regarding national security with appropriate seriousness. And then the big one that ties this all together, temporary flight restrictions, or TFRs. TFRs are not permanent special use airspace. They are issued by notice to airmen. They can go up fast, and they have ended more than a few flying days and flying careers. Presidential TFRs are the most common ones most pilots encounter. When the president travels, a TFR goes up around his location. The inner ring extends 10 nautical miles and is essentially off limits. The outer ring extends from 10 to 30 nautical miles, and you can fly in it, but you must be in two-way radio communication with ATC. TFRs also go up for sporting events, wildfires, natural disasters, air shows, and special security events. A stadium TFR during a major professional football or baseball game extends 3 nautical miles and up to 3,000 feet above ground level, starting 1 hour before and ending 1 hour after. The lesson with TFRs is simple and non-negotiable. Check them every single time before you fly, not the night before. During your pre-flight planning on the day of the flight, they can appear with very little notice. Your electronic flight bag, whether that is ForeFlight, Garmin Pilot, or another application, will show active TFRs on the map. Flight service will tell you about them during a standard weather briefing. The FAA also maintains a TFR website. Use any of these.
Busting a presidential TFR brings intercept aircraft, likely a certificate action, and a conversation with federal authorities you genuinely do not want. There are pilots every year who fly into them because they did not check. Do not be one of them. Here is the practical framework I want you to carry into every cross-country plan. When you pull up your route, scan the entire corridor for hatched areas, shaded regions, and letter number combinations. If you see anything that is not standard controlled airspace, look it up, then categorize it. P, R, W, MOA, or A. Each one has different rules and a different required action on your part. Check the altitude block. A restricted area that caps at 8,000 feet above mean sea level will not affect you if you're cruising at 10,500. A MOA that runs from the surface up to flight level 180 will affect you regardless of your altitude. Check the hours of operation. A MOA that runs Monday through Friday from 7 in the morning to 10 at night won't affect your Saturday afternoon flight. Then make the call. If there is any uncertainty about whether something is active, call flight service. That is exactly what they are there for. And plan your alternate routing before you need it. If there is a real chance the restricted area is active, know where you're going if you cannot go through it. Work that out at the kitchen table, not while you're airborne and watching the restricted boundary get closer on your moving map. Let me leave you with the bigger picture. Special use airspace is not bureaucratic clutter. It exists because mid-air collisions are fatal and because certain activities on the ground are genuinely deadly to aircraft flying above them. Understanding what each type means and what it asks of you is not just checkride prep, it is the situational awareness that keeps you safe for a lifetime of flying. The Airman Certification Standards cover this under navigation and airspace tasks, and an examiner will test you on it. But more than the test, this airspace is there every time you file across country. Get comfortable reading it before you're at the airplane and before the stakes are real. Sources today include the FAA Aeronautical Information Manual, the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, and the current Airman Certification Standards. All of it is freely available from the FAA. Find us at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Fly smart out there.